व्युदायश्चापि पुंसल्य व्युदायश्चापि पुंसल्य मनोभेति नवम नवम मनोभेति नवम नवम बुद्धो सतिम न भिद्रियेत रयात बुद्धो सतिम न बिभ्रयात ताम बिभ्राद उभयाच्युत ताम बिभ्राद उभयाच्युत युदायश्चापि पुंसल्य मनोभ्येति नवम नवम बुद्धं सतिं न बिभ्रयात् ताम बिभ्रात् उभयाच्युत विदायश्चापि पुंसल्य मनोभेति नवम नवम बुद्धो सति न बिभ्रयात् ताम बिभ्राद् उभयाच्युत व्युधया of a woman who is married, cha and api even, pumshalya promiscuous, manaha the mind, abhyeti is attracted, navam navam to newer and newer lovers, buddhaha one who is intelligent, asatim an unchaste woman, nabibrayat should not maintain, tam her, bibrat maintaining, ubaya from both good fortune in this world and in the next, chuta fallen. Translation: the mind of a promiscuous woman always hankers for new lovers, even if she is married. An intelligent man should not keep such an unchaste wife, for if he does, he will lose his good fortune both in this life and the next. Doesn't have a purport. We will read further. Text number 49. The Supreme Lord said, O saintly lady, O princess, we deceived you only because we wanted to hear you speak like this. Indeed, everything you said in reply to my words is most certainly true. Whatever benedictions you hope for in order to become free of material desires are ever yours, or O fair and noble lady, for you are my unalloyed devotee. O sinless one, I have now seen firsthand the pure love and chaste attachment you have for your husband. Even though shaken by my words, your mind could not be pulled away from me. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur quotes the following verse describing the pure love between Rukmini and Krishna. Swartha dvamsa rathim sati Swartha dvamsa rahitim sati api dvamsam karane yad bhava bandhanam yuno saprema prakriti tita. When the affectionate bond between a young man and a young woman can never be destroyed. Even when there is every cause for destruction of that relationship, the attachment between them is said to be pure love. This is the nature of the eternal loving affairs between Lord Krishna and his pure conjugal associates. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunvilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsya Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanja Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasandubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Vaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. I'd like to seek the blessings of all the assembled devotees here so they can speak something from this particular pastime of Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm sitting on this Vyasasana after almost like 5 months or so. Been going through a lot of ups and downs in my health. But it's very interesting that this particular verse has come up. And it's come up as quite a surprise. This section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which Rukmini Devi and Krishna are having a conversation, is one of the very special sections of the Bhagavatam, because we find a dealing between husband and wife over here, and in a very informal setting and in a very intimate way. We do not find too many of such discussions across the Srimad Bhagavatam, in all the scriptures practically. And when such discussions come, it actually shows us some inner aspects of relationships. It also shows us the mood between a devotee and the Supreme Lord. So from this particular series of verses that we just read, there are some beautiful understandings that come out and some amazing concepts that we can learn from it. Of course, I have no qualification to speak on such an exalted subject matter as the discussion between Krishna and his, you know, conjugal relationships, their dealings. But we can, you know, downgrade it to our level from the understanding that Krishna represents Supreme Lord and Rukmini Devi represents his unalloyed devotee. So at that level, there is a lot to learn. There is a lot to understand from this pastime. If you consider Rukmini Devi and Krishna's dealings as a husband and wife, as the conjugal relationship, we have nothing to really learn there. But if we just downgrade it to our level, at the level of a sadhaka, as a level of a struggling devotee, there is a lot to learn from this pastime. So, one of the first things that really comes out from this verse is that the mind is not loyal to the cause. The mind always wants newer and newer experiences. It is never satisfied with something that is stable. That is the nature of the mind. So here, Rukmini Devi is telling Krishna that the mind is the nature of the mind is to always search for newer experiences of love, newer experiences of pleasure and things like that. So the question for us is that, is our mind loyal to Krishna? The mind always feels, there is somebody else who will make me happy. Krishna is promising us unlimited happiness. But then, the problem with Krishna is that, the kind of happiness that Krishna is promising us, the kind of pleasure that Krishna is promising us, it doesn't happen according to our time zone. It happens according to his time zone. So the mind is a restless animal. It's like a monkey. It just can't wait patiently. So naturally the mind wants results now. And because the mind is hankering for results now, the moment there is a loss of expectation, the mind says, this is not working. I have to change my loyalty. Find somebody else I can be loyal towards. And therefore, the mind is in a constant struggle towards shifting its loyalties. And naturally, there are some people in this world who say, let me not be loyal to anyone. Let me not be loyal to everyone, you know. That's a very typical Hindu mindset, you know. Why should I be loyal to one? Let me be loyal to everyone, you know. So this mindset also brings in the nature of the mind. The nature of the mind is, doesn't want to get fixed up in one, doesn't want to get stuck in one, because there is always a chance of risk. So here Rukmini Devi is analyzing that mindset of a living entity, of always being dissatisfied. So Rukmini Devi is saying, a dissatisfied mind leads you to loss of good fortune. When a mind is dissatisfied and it's focusing on many things, like if you're trying to get water from the ground and you dig a little bit, water doesn't come out. You dig a little bit here, little bit there. You dig in 20-100 places expecting that water will come out fast, it doesn't come out. Dig in one place but dig deep. Then there's a good chance that you'll find water. So here, that mindset is being showed by Rukmini Devi here. One time, there was a dog. And there was a farmer who had this dog. And every day, he used to find something interesting that this dog is doing. So in this village, whenever a car would go or a vehicle would go fast, the dog would run after that vehicle, full speed, barking like anything. So one neighbor, he asked this farmer, do you think that your dog will ever catch a car? The farmer said, that is not my problem. That is not my worry. My worry is, even if one day the dog catches a car, what will he do with it? There is nothing that the dog can do with a car. So our mind is exactly like that dog, trying to run after certain things and capture it, thinking that that thing is going to give me pleasure. Actually, the pleasure is only in running behind it. When you actually get it, you realize there is no pleasure in it. Or rather, you don't know how to utilize it to get pleasure. That's the nature of this world. And that's exactly the nature of spiritual life also. So we begin to feel that this path is going to give me pleasure. I run behind that path. And then I realize that not this path. There's sometimes these dogs, they run behind one car. And then suddenly one more car comes, he goes and runs behind this car. Then a third car comes, so he's just running everywhere without really understanding that even if I run behind the car, I'm not going to get it. Even if I get it, I can't use it. So, here, the understanding that we need to learn is that either we should subordinate our likes and dislikes to the purpose of your life, or you do the opposite. Subordinate the purpose of your life to your likes and dislikes. You have to do one of the two. Either you subordinate your likes and dislikes to the purpose of your life by following a path of discipline, or you subordinate the purpose of your life to your likes and dislikes by following a life of following the mind, enjoying what the mind tells you. So one of the two is what Rukmini Devi is indicating over here. A person who is unloyal feels that if I run behind this person, I'm not going to get pleasure. Let me run behind here also. Let me run here also. In the end, the person is so dissatisfied because the nature of the mind is to only tell you, After running so much, mind will tell you, just see, you are not satisfied. So the mind will only tell you, run behind this, you will get satisfaction. And after you don't get satisfaction, the same mind will tell you, just see, why you ran unnecessarily. You should run behind this fellow. And then you ran behind another. So the nature of the mind is just is keep you in a circus, constantly in a flux. One time, Narada Muni, he was visiting the spiritual world. And this is not a Puranic story or something. This is like more like a folk tale. But it's a very interesting folk tale. So Narada Muni went to the spiritual world and he was very happy. And he was telling the devotees over there, this place is the best place in the entire universe. So the devotees asked him that, if this place is the best, why you keep leaving this place again and again? So he told them, I am going so that I can get more people here. So they became very happy. And the Lord was hearing this conversation. So he became very happy with Narada Muni's attitude that he wants to go and get more and more people to the spiritual world. So the Lord said, please go ahead, get as many people as you can. And Narada Muni went with his veena and he started singing and dancing and he was really inviting everyone, come with me to the spiritual world, I'll take you to a place where there is so much happiness. Thousands of people started following Narada Muni. And as they were on their way to the spiritual world, suddenly they were passing through a forest. From the trees, gold coins fell. Thousands of gold coins everywhere. So half the crowd, they got so engrossed in the gold coins, they're picking gold coins like anything. Narada Muni was shouting, come on, forget it, we're going to the spiritual world. He said, no, you go ahead, we'll come little later. And half the crowd remained behind and Narada Muni went with half the crowd. And the other half that went with Narada Muni were thinking, Narada Muni is really a mystic yogi, you know. If in the beginning of our journey only gold coins fell, what will happen later? So they went with Narada Muni a little ahead. And as they went a little ahead, in another place, diamond coins fell. And everybody got engrossed in those diamond coins, you know. And Narada Muni was left only with four people. And Narada Muni was telling these four people, at least you come with me, let's go to the spiritual world. Those four people said, told Narada Muni, my dear Narada, just look at these people, all fallen. They are completely forgotten about God. If we also go with you, then who will remind them? We will remain over here and become their teachers. So Narada Muni understood, you know, these were all cunning people. And then he went back to the spiritual world alone. And he went and met Lord. The Lord asked him, what happened? You were supposed to get thousands of people. So he said, my dear Lord, so many people came behind me, but somewhere on the way they got lost. This is the nature of the mind. The nature of the mind is that it wants to follow a purpose in life. But while following the purpose in life, it gets stuck in likes and dislikes. And then you lose focus on the purpose of life and you prioritize your likes and dislikes over the purpose of your life. Krishna, when he is replying to Rukmini Devi, after so many things that Rukmini Devi spoke to him, Krishna replies in a very interesting way because he is analyzing the words of Rukmini Devi from the point of view that she is a pure devotee. So Krishna is trying to tell us, how does a pure devotee think? What is the mood and mindset of a pure devotee? And what is the nature of a pure devotee? So Rukmini Devi, Krishna is telling Rukmini Devi that I deceived you. So here, if you read the statement, he says, O saintly lady, O princess, we deceived you only because we wanted to hear you speak like this. Indeed, everything you said in reply to my words is most certainly true. So essentially, Krishna deceives a devotee many times. But when Krishna deceives a devotee also, there is a special cause behind it. Srila Prabhupada, in one of the purports, he talks about when Dhritarashtra leaves without informing the Pandavas, he says, great men cheat for a great cause. So the concept of deception, what is true and what is not true, is actually not depending so much on the fact itself, but depending on the intention behind the fact. So many times when great devotees cheat or apparently speak untruth or speak lies, there is a cause behind it which is much greater. And that cause justifies the action. So here, in deceiving, Krishna is actually showing his love. In trying to fool with Rukmini Devi, in trying to pull her leg, in trying to make fun of her, in trying to deceive her, Krishna is actually showing his love for her. So, we find that in Kaliya Leela, when Krishna is subduing Kaliya, so Krishna does exactly this kind of behavior. He cheats Kaliya in one sense. Krishna jumps into the lake, and then Kaliya comes and coils him, puts him in his coils. And it's explained that Krishna remains in the coils of Kaliya for one muhurta, about 48 minutes. Now, the question is, how can Kaliya hold Krishna for 48 minutes? It's impossible. And the two, why would Krishna just remain in that coils of Kaliya for 48 minutes? So, as soon as Krishna jumps into the waters of the Kaliya lake, there is the entire nature, the entire environment goes through a turbulence. Meteors are falling from the skies, earthquakes are happening on the ground, and all kinds of ill omens are happening everywhere. People on their bodies are finding, you know, bad signs. Their eyes are twitching, their legs are twitching. Like, so there's a lot of ill omen going on. So, just like when we apparently see the different movies of this world, before a fight scene, what happens is that there is a lot of music, you know. You know exactly when a fight scene is going to start, before the fight starts, because the music starts in that direction. When a sad scene is going to start, you know, some kind of sitar or some kind of, you know, sad music starts. So essentially, there is a dramatic music behind every scene. Similarly, in Krishna Leela also, when Krishna is going to enact a particular pastime, there is a whole, the demigods come together and arrange the exact mood. So, entire Vrindavan came to know that Krishna is in trouble, Krishna has entered the Kaliya lake. So, practically everyone from Vrindavan comes towards that lake. Krishna was waiting in the coils of Kaliya for 48 minutes for it to become houseful. For everybody in Vrindavan to come and stand around so that they can see his show, you know. And Krishna did not want anybody to miss even one scene in the show. So, he waited patiently in that coils of Kaliya. So 48 minutes Krishna was waiting, and as soon as Krishna saw that every person in Vrindavan was there, Krishna, you know, kind of squeezed himself. He became a little thinner. Kaliya lost his grip, and then Krishna jumped out. And then when Krishna jumped out, he started running in different directions, and Kaliya was trying to chase him. And as Kaliya was trying to chase Krishna, Krishna was absolutely fooling him with his transcendental agility. So essentially, and then, of course, Krishna began to punish Kaliya. Essentially, in life, whenever we find that the moment we feel that we have grip over Krishna, Krishna does something that completely, you know, bewilders us. Completely bewilders us. And the most important thing in this whole concept is that Krishna's deception or Krishna's punishment is also the exhibition of his love. In the case of Rukmini Devi, Krishna deceived her, Krishna fooled her, Krishna really tricked her. But in the middle of the trick, there is a love exhibiting. So the difference between the people in this world who trick and who cheat and who deceive and Krishna is that people who deceive in this world, who trick in this world, there is a wrong intention behind that cheating and tricking. And when Krishna tricks and Krishna cheats, Krishna deceives, there is actually a greater cause, a better intention, a greater bond of love that comes out after that trickery. So, what is good and what is bad is not determined by the action by itself, but by the intention behind the action and by the result that the action leads to. So, when the result is greater, the action is justified. When the intention is greater, the action is justified. So here Krishna is trying to tell Rukmini Devi that I cheated you, I deceived you, but my deception is also my love. When Kaliya was punished by Krishna, the Nagapatnis, the wives of Kaliya, they came and prayed to Krishna. They said, my dear Lord, your punishing of our husband is completely right because your punishment is actually your love. So when, as devotees, we begin to see what Krishna gives us in our life, whether it is cheating, whether he tricks us, whether he deceives us, or whether he punishes us, is actually a investment of his love, or rather a deposit of his love, then we become grateful for that, and in fact our love increases beyond that. So at this point of time, Krishna is cheating Rukmini Devi, but the result of that cheating is that the love between them grew much more. The connection between them grew much more. So if the result of anything that Krishna does is going to help us grow our love for him, that's perfect. And therefore, one has to learn that when we see Krishna's actions in this way, we need to change our spectacles. We need to change our glasses, how we see these actions. One time there was a devotee, he was searching for God. So he was desperate to see God. So he met one saintly person and he asked him that, where can I see God? So the saintly man, he told this devotee, God is in your heart. You can see God within your heart. So this man went and closed his eyes, sat and started focusing on his heart to see, try to experience God within his heart. And when he closed his eyes and was really meditating and trying to experience God within his heart, he got scared. Because within his heart he saw demons with big teeth, with horns, and like really scary looking demons. He ran away, he opened his eyes and he ran away from there. He said, I can't see God within my heart, you know. And he ran far away, and then he met another saintly person. And he asked him that, you know, this saintly person told me God is within my heart, but I couldn't find, I only found demons within my heart. The saintly person said, God is within satsang. Sit in the midst of devotees, go to a satsang, you'll find God there. This man went and sat in a satsang. After a long time of sitting in the satsang, he couldn't see God at all. He got fed up and he left that place and he went. As he was traveling, he met another saint. And he asked the saint, I met two saints who told me where God is. One told me he is within my heart, but in my heart I only found demons. And one told me that God is in the satsang, I couldn't find God over there at all. This man said, both of them are right. But the problem is with your eyesight. You don't have the right eyesight to see. Therefore, you have to wear the right glasses. This man said, tell me where I can get glasses. Tell me who is the place, where is the place that I can purchase glasses. This saintly person said, you have to go to a guru. Only when you go to a guru, you will be able to find the right glasses which will be able to give you the vision. This man said, and of course the saint said, the problem is that when you go to a guru, you have to pay a big price for those glasses. So he said, what is the big price? He said, the big price is pure character. If you go to a guru with pure character, then that is the price with which guru will give you the glasses, and you wear those glasses, then you will be able to see God. So essentially he told him, both the saints were correct. The first saint was correct to tell you that God is within your heart. But you could see demons within your heart because the demons were in the front and God is behind them. Only when you practice spiritual life and purify, remove all those demons of greed, lust, anger, then God will be visible who is within your heart. And how do you do that? You do that by following the process of sadhana as recommended by great saints. And in satsang, when you are in the association of devotees, how will you see God? You will see God when you go to satsang with a peaceful mind. When you do not go to satsang with an agitated mind, when you go to satsang with a peaceful mind, in a desire to learn, in a desire to absorb, then the combination of the two will lead you to understanding and seeing God. So essentially, Krishna deceives his devotees to show the world the purity and the greatness of his devotees. To show the world that in spite of me tricking them, in spite of me punishing them, in spite of me fooling with them, my devotee never gives me up. My devotee never deviates. So, in this world, success sometimes leads you to failures. So, there are three types of people. There are good people in this world and there are successful people in this world. But there are great people in this world who remain good in spite of being successful. So it is easy to be good and it is easy to be successful. But it is difficult to be good when you are successful. Because generally when somebody is very successful, there is a tendency that success brings you to a great amount of pride, and then you lose your goodness, innate goodness. So Krishna, when he handles his devotees, when he leaves some crisis in a devotee's life, or when he deals with a devotee badly, essentially what he's trying to show the world is that, just see, my devotee never deviates in the midst of success or in the midst of failures. When Yudhishthir was given the Rajasuya, when he was made the king of the world, in the midst of the Rajasuya Yajna, he recognized Krishna. And when Yudhishthir was made the beggar, in the midst of a failure, when Durvas came, they recognized Krishna. So, Krishna tries to show through his devotees that in all phases of life, the devotee runs to Krishna only and doesn't leave Krishna, in spite of the devotee visibly seeing that Krishna is tricking them, Krishna is fooling with them. That's the nature of a great devotee. And the most amazing thing is that Krishna wants to hear from a devotee's mouth. Krishna knows Rukmini Devi's love. So many years they've been living together. They have children, they have grandchildren, they have spent such a long period of time together. But in spite of that, Krishna is telling Rukmini Devi, I did this only to hear from you, these words. So essentially, what it means is that Krishna wants to constantly hear how a devotee is depending on him and how a devotee loves him. So love has to be expressed clearly. It cannot be assumed. Whether it is coming, whether it is about devotional service or whether it is about relationships in this world, you cannot assume that other person knows that you love him or her. You have to clearly express it. Can you imagine the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna? He is expecting expression and we are thinking assumption is okay. Love can never be assumed. It has to be expressed. Relationships are built not based on assumptions but based on expressions. So, when you come across a problem in your life, there are two ways of handling a problem. One way of handling a problem is when somebody sees the problem intellectually. When you come across a problem in your life and somebody is telling you, like for example, yesterday I went to somebody's house whose mother had passed away, mother had died. Now, when I went, they were asking me questions, intellectual questions based on the Gita, based on the karma theory and things like that. They were asking me why this happened. She was such a nice person, everything was perfect. So essentially, when somebody asks in an intellectual way, you solve the problem in an intellectual way. So when a problem is analyzed intellectually, you give the solution intellectually. But when the problem is analyzed, or rather it is not analyzed, but the problem is seen emotionally, you shouldn't give a solution that is intellectual. You have to give a solution that is emotional only. So when you go to somebody and a person says, I am going through a crisis, I am crying, that time don't quote Bhagavad Gita. Don't talk about, great philosophy. That time, just sympathize with them. Just understand the emotions that they are going through in their lives. Like when Satyabhama's father, Satrajit, died, Satyabhama came crying all the way from Dwarka to Hastinapur to Krishna. And when Satyabhama was crying, Krishna didn't speak Bhagavad Gita there. Krishna, he cried with her. He cried along with her bitterly. When Arjun asked the questions in the Gita, before the Gita started, Arjuna analyzed the problem philosophically, intellectually. Because Arjuna analyzed the problem intellectually, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita. So essentially, just because you know Bhagavad Gita, don't speak everywhere. Even Krishna never spoke. Krishna is God, he is the one who gave Gita, doesn't mean he spoke Gita everywhere. He spoke Gita when the need was there to speak Gita. When the need is there to give love there. And that's what Krishna is doing over here in analyzing Satyabhama's problem. So, some problems don't have an immediate solution. And some problems have intellectual solutions. So, the problems that don't have an immediate solution, or rather they need to be addressed emotionally, just address them emotionally. Leave it there. So, that is how we understand in this whole concept how Krishna is dealing with his with Satyabhama. So because there was a conversation going on, he spoke, you know, logically, and Satyabhama refuted him. But then once the refutation is over, now the problem has to be solved emotionally. It doesn't need an intellectual solution anymore. And therefore, Krishna brings an emotional perspective of love. And that's where he adds sweetness to this pastime. He ends his pastime in a very sweet note. Satyabhama's replies convinced Krishna of one thing. The one thing Satyabhama's replies convinced Krishna is that his devotees are cleverer than him. If you study, Krishna wanted to have a intellectual stimulation from, you know, Satyabhama, from Rukmini, sorry. He always got that kind of stimulation from other, many other queens, including Satyabhama. But from Rukmini, he always got a very soft, you know, emotional, docile type of, you know, relationship. So he wanted to experience some other rasa with Rukmini. He knew Rukmini is very intelligent, and he knew Rukmini has that kind of ability to be able to get angry on him and to fight with him. What is a family when there is only love all the time, you know? It's very boring. When you go to a hotel, every time you get love only, you know? People speak sweetly, they smile nicely, they dress nicely, everything is sweet in a hotel. But you don't expect the same thing in a family. In a family, you expect some variety. There has to be some romantic moments, there has to be some sweet moments, there has to be some boring moments, there has to be some fighting moments. There will be different varieties in a family to make family life nice. So here, Krishna was experiencing only one variety from Rukmini Devi. He said, I am bored. So he wanted some other variety from her, and he created this whole discussion to create a variety. And when he got that kind of variety, and Rukmini Devi really smashed every argument that Krishna had, Krishna was very satisfied. This is my devotee, you know. So, Krishna is impressed by his pure devotees. So, we find so many stories in the scriptures of how the devotees of the Lord can stimulate the Lord in reciprocating in special ways. This whole story of Sakshi Gopal is nothing but one devotee is stimulating the Lord in a very special way, and the Lord reciprocating based on that stimulation. And therefore, the nature of the Lord and his devotees is that there is a constant competition to reciprocate with one another in the way they want, the other person wants it. And that's what love is. Love is not about one stereotyped way of reciprocating. Love is a very dynamic process which works according to moods. So here, Krishna showed a very, you know, intellectual type of mood to Rukmini Devi, and Rukmini Devi exactly showed that mood, and she smashed every argument that Krishna showed, and then that brought out a lot of love from Krishna, and Krishna was very happy. So one time, there's a very interesting story in South India, in Kanchipuram. This story shows how the Lord and his devotees have such a deep bonding between themselves that they're ready to do anything for one another. In fact, there is a great sense of dependency on one another. There was a great devotee whose name was Bhakti Sar. So this devotee was constantly absorbed in devotional service to the Lord, and he would travel around everywhere. So one time, Bhakti Sar reached Kanchipuram, and he was residing in that place. And he had a disciple whose name was Kanikannan. He was an exalted disciple, powerful Vaishnav. So both of them started living in Kanchipuram. And there was one lady, one elderly lady, she would come every day and she would put rangoli in the place where Bhakti Sar and his disciple Kanikannan stayed. And at some point of time, Bhakti Sar was really happy with the kind of attitude and the service that she would do. And he told that lady, you ask me anything, ask me any boon, I'll fulfill. So this old lady, she said that, you know, I'm a very old lady, and I am almost in the fag end of my life, but I want to do some seva. I want to become young again. And so Bhakti Sar, he gave her the benediction and he made her young again. So this old lady became a young woman. And the king of that place, he got attracted to this girl and he married her. And they were living together. And as they were living together, the king was getting older and older, but this old lady was not getting old only. She was exactly the same age. So this king got bewildered and he told his wife, what is happening? I am getting older. Why are you not getting old? And this lady told her story that Bhakti Sar has blessed me. He is my guru and he is such an exalted devotee. So the king told this lady, you call Bhakti Sar and tell him to bless me also. The old lady said, he is a great devotee. He doesn't bless like that for money. So he said, what do you do? She said, Bhakti Sar, if he is happy on you and he is, you know, wants to bestow his mercy on you, then he will give you. So king said, tell me what to do. So the king's wife said that the disciple of the king, Kanikandan, he comes every day to beg in our house. Maybe if we ask him and he becomes happy with you, then maybe Bhakti Sar will bless you. And he said, Kanikandan is such a powerful devotee that even he is powerful enough to bless. So she said, when Kanikandan sings and his devotion is so powerful that even if a tree is dead, if Kanikandan sings next to the tree becomes alive and stands. So the king was very impressed. And next day the Kanikandan comes and the king calls Kanikandan to his court and tells him that it seems that your spiritual master is powerful. Tell him to give me blessing so I become young again. Kanikandan said, my spiritual master doesn't function like this. He is not impressed with money and he is not impressed with power. He blesses when a person deserves. So the king got really angry on Kanikandan. He said, how dare you speak to me like this? He said, if you don't bless me now, I'll kick you out of my kingdom. Kanikandan said, do whatever you want, but I can't bless you. The king said, get out of my kingdom. And Kanikandan said, okay, I'm going. He walked out. And he went to his guru Bhakti Sar and told him, king has thrown me out of the kingdom, I'm going. Bhakti Sar said, if you are going, what is the use of me staying over here? I also will go. So he went to Varadaraj of Kanchipuram and he told Varadaraj that I'm going. King has kicked Kanikandan out, so I'm going with him. Varadaraj said, if you are going, I will also go. So he also came out. All the deities in Kanchipuram, there are 20 Vishnu deities in Kanchipuram, all 20 walked out. There was one deity who was sleeping on a snake bed, you know. So he also rolled his snake band, put it under his arm and he walked out. So all the deities in the whole city, they were walking out. All the demigods, all followed them practically. And when the king realized that all the deities have walked out, the next day the sun didn't come up only in the kingdom. The king got completely bewildered. He ran to, you know, the deities, you know, this Vishnu deity, and he told him, my dear Lord, please come back to my kingdom. The kingdom is dark without you. He said, I can't go when my devotees are not there. And then the king fell at the feet of Kanikandan and Bhakti Sar and he begged them, please come back. And Kanikandan said, okay, I'll come back. And he came and Bhakti Sar followed and all the deities followed behind. You know? And just to commemorate this reciprocation between his devotees and the Lord laid down a snake bed and he laid in the opposite direction. Even now, that particular deity is called as Yatotkari Vishnu. He's not lying in this direction, he's lying in the opposite direction, you know, generally when the Vishnu deity lies. So that shows how the Lord, he is ready to reciprocate with his devotees in any way. And the devotees also are ready to reciprocate to the Lord in any way. That's the mood between the devotee and the Lord. So when the Lord does such actions, deceives or punishes or does something which is bewildering, how does a devotee reciprocate? So even though a devotee may be shaken by Krishna's actions or words, his mind never gets pulled away from him. That's what Krishna is saying here to Rukmini Devi. So essentially, when God deviates or God delays, the devotee understands that God's delays are not God's denials. So devotee understands that when there is here Vishnu Chakra Thakur is commenting in this verse that when the affectionate bond between a young man and a young woman can never be destroyed, even when there is every cause for destruction of that relationship, the attachment between them is said to be pure love. That essentially means that everybody in this world, if they want to prove that they actually love Krishna, they will go through one phase in their life where their love will be tested. When they go through a phase in their life when there is every reason to not love God, when there is every reason to doubt God's actions, when there is every reason to doubt God's love, at that time, if you continue to love God, that shows that the love is actually genuine and it's not false. In the section where Madhavendra Puri is told by Gopal to get Chandan, there is a very beautiful verse that describes what is the meaning of love. Here it said, Pragada premere yehi sobhava achar, nija dukkha vignanahi na kare vichar. Pragada premere yehi sobhava achar. What is the meaning of pragada prem? Prem means love. Pragada means condensed love. This is the sobhav and achar of condensed love. Nija dukkha vigna adi. Na kare vichar. When a devotee is not bothered about one's personal inconveniences, one's personal miseries, one's obstacles that come in the path of execution of that seva, and in spite of that, enthusiastically you keep doing it, that's love. Anybody is capable of doing part-time goodness. Anyone in this world is, you know, very capable of being part-time good. Can you be full-time good? That's the question. To be good when everything is good in your life, it's very easy. But to be good when everything is bad in your life, that's not easy. So essentially, Krishna is trying to show through this story that a devotee means full-time goodness, not part-time goodness. Whether God reciprocates with you out of love or God reciprocates with you out of punishment or deception, you don't care. Your reciprocation with the Lord is genuine and your reciprocation with the Lord is permanent. And that is the indicator of substance. That is the indicator of what you value the most in your life. Most people, when they go through a crisis, what they value the most is very easily visible. One time there was a king who was attacking a village. And there's going to be a loot. And there was nobody in that village, there was no army in that village, it was absolute cakewalk. But when the king came to know that this village is, you know, absolutely unprotected, the king made a declaration. Till tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, I give you option, I give you time. All the women in this village can walk out of the village. Nobody will touch you. But every woman is allowed to carry one bundle on their head, whatever valuables you have, take and go. No men can leave this village. No old men, no children can leave this village. Only women can walk out. So, when he declared this, the next day morning, 8 o'clock, the king found something very surprising. The women were walking out, on their heads they were carrying a bundle of cloth. And the bundle was so heavy that practically they were not able to walk only. They were struggling, you know. Literally. The king was surprised. What? Every woman is carrying such a big bundle. What are they carrying? Gold can't be so heavy. You know, diamonds can't be so heavy. What are they carrying so much? The king made all of them put their bundle down and open. When all of them opened, inside the bundle were their husbands, the old men and the children. The king was surprised. He said, if this is the attitude that these women in this village have, they value relationships, they value people over all their resources, this village is not worth attacking. He left from there, never attacked. So essentially, when a devotee is given a warning, when a devotee goes through such phase in their life, when you have to drop everything else and carry the most valuable thing on your head, what will you carry? If you carry Krishna on your head, then you understand that there is the loyalty in terms of badness, bad phase also. But when you tend to carry all material things on your head, your material aspects on your head, that's when you understand that that has been the most valuable thing and not really Krishna. So in the middle of bad, how can you show goodness? And that's what life is about. So here, Krishna, through this entire episode, the entire pastime, he's churning out through Rukmini Devi's words, through Rukmini Devi's mood, what really a devotee of substance is. What really a devotee of goodness is, full-time goodness. So always there is an intellectual conflict between our instincts and our conscience. Our instincts tell us to follow the path of pleasure. And our conscience demands us to follow the path of right and wrong. So the question is that when we have a choice between the two, what do we choose? Do we choose the path of pleasure, following the instincts, or do we choose the path of conscience, following what is right and wrong? If we choose the path of conscience, then we are prioritizing Krishna over all other valuables in this world. And if we choose the path of pleasure, we are prioritizing pleasure over Krishna. And that means that we are not full-time goodness, we are part-time goodness. And that's something that we can learn from this particular story. I'd like to stop over here. It's already late, we'll not take questions. If there's anything that I have spoken that has been useful to you all, I would consider it to be my fortune. If there's anything I've spoken which is out of the way or wrong, please forgive me. More than anything else, whatever I have spoken, it is theory. Please bless and pray that I can follow what I have spoken so that it doesn't remain just an intellectual baggage, rather it becomes a realization that can be applied. Thank you very much. Grantra Ashimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.